Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is part two of our exciting discussion with Dr. Ralph Moss. Ralph Moss is the head of an outfit called CancerDecisions.com. He is also the subject of a new movie called Second Opinion. And today we're also with Eric Marola, who is the producer-director of Second Opinion. By the way, it's a movie that you can catch at your local theater. There will be previews on the East Coast and on the West Coast. New York starts today, Friday, the 29th of August, correct? Going through throughout Labor Day weekend and into next week, correct?
Correct. There's actually 35 shows, five shows a day at the Cinema Village. And we're actually staggering each city by week so we can actually try to be in that city to do Q&As and do local media for it. So, yeah, it's going to be New York City, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Portland, and Seattle between now and September the 25th.
That's great. So an opportunity for folks to meet and greet and ask questions. You also are spearheading a petition campaign to get Memorial Sloan Kettering to reconsider Laetrile, or at least review their decision to say that it's settled science that Laetrile is worthless. You know, it's like we've resolved so many issues that are settled science, you know, climate change and so on. Maybe it's time to, you know, open up the Pandora's box and reexamine it.
Absolutely. You know, another part of this, the fact that it is 40 years old and the war on cancer has been enacted, you know, 40 years ago. And then the same year that they promised us the cure was the same year they put out a huge press conference putting the final nail into the coffin of Laetrile. So what I'm trying to say is it would be one thing if remarkable progress had been made for late stage cancer patients, which is why I think it's very much valid to bring up the Laetrile issue again. So that's the first part of it. And we live in this wonderful world where of the internet where people can now become so participatory, where a film becomes more than just a film. It can become a movement. And the very beginnings of that, we've started a change.org petition that is essentially an open letter that Ralph wrote to his former colleagues and to the general public that all goes to the president of the center or the chairman of the center. So, by the way, every time you sign it, an email goes into his email box. We have about 1,200 to 1,300 signatures at the moment. We've got some huge promotional things going on to make it bigger. But essentially, if you go to secondopinionfilm.com, you can't miss the link for that. So,
great. So back to you, Ralph. You're the author of numerous books, some of which we've interviewed you on, the subject of antioxidants against cancer, questioning chemotherapy, the cancer industry, which is actually the book that got Eric fired up about this project. And you've even participated in a PBS documentary, The Cancer War. So you have a long history here. You also are at the helm of CancerDecisions.com, and for many years, literally decades, you know, I have to say that I like to support the care of cancer patients. I don't claim that I'm, you know, a genius at curing cancer. I'm not a specialist in this field, but when people come to me in an effort to get an idea of what they can do on the complementary medicine front or even on the conventional medicine front, I often refer them to CancerDecisions.com, and I say, look, you know, you're going to get a smorgasbord of ideas that may open up doors for you to better ways to manage your cancer, not necessarily in an alternative or integrative or, you know, natural way, but just the best of different cancer modalities are reviewed at CancerDecisions.com. So tell us about that project, Ralph.
Yes. Well, each of the books, the reports, is about 500 pages in length.
No, so you go to the website, and I notice that you can click on a specific type of cancer, and you
correct.
Boiled it down to where you cover you know, some very esoteric cancers you don't cover.
Well, we originally, and this has been now a 20-year project, it started literally in 1994, we originally had more than 100 types of cancer reports on, I think it got up to about 135. It was okay to write those, and I wrote each of them by hand, as it were, but it became impossible
to
maintain.
It's like having kittens.
It is like having kittens, and the kittens have had kittens, right?
And
we felt we owed it to people, even if we knew that we probably never would sell another report on that kind of cancer, we still wrote the report. So that went on for about 10 years. Then we discovered that we could write them. I could write them, but I couldn't maintain them. And the big thing was I was writing reports instead of updating reports. So we cut back to 22 reports. 22 reports, 22 most common cancer diagnoses still represents about 95% of all the cancers.
So that would be breast, lung, prostate, lymphoma, and so on.
Cervical, endometrial, and bladder, and so forth. So there is, in each of these, there is a conventional treatment section, and there is a complementary and alternative section. And those all have to be updated, and I'm proud to say somewhere I found the time amidst all of this whirlwind of publicity around the Eric's film to actually finish the updates of all 22 reports. So now they are up to date with this year's findings from the American Society for Clinical Oncology, with the latest revisions to the DaVita cancer textbook, with the latest statements from the National Comprehensive Cancer Network. So I have my little checklist, and I go through to make sure that people are getting the best and most modern and most effective conventional treatment. I also feel that what makes us unique, I don't know of anything else like this on the internet, is that we take a balanced but critical view, a friendly critical view, of all the treatments that we deal with, including the conventional ones. So,
but also the alternative ones. There may be some clinics which sound great in Germany or Mexico, and then you'll get feedback from patients, and they'll say, hey, you know, it didn't really work for me.
That's right. Or something went wrong. So we're, and treatments that maybe, you know, don't work. I mean, SEACT, I mean, so many patients take SEACT, but do they know that there was a study showing larger tumors and more tumors in animals when they gave them the SEACT? Now, if you're tied in financially to SEACT, you might not be so inclined to give that information.
Well, the problem is you'll look it up, and you'll go to a website that ostensibly looks like an informational website, and then it'll say, click here to order.
Yes.
And it's basically a promotional site.
Correct.
So, and a lot of people, frankly, they don't have the sophistication to discern that something is promotional versus something that's objective.
So we have no advertising on our site, and we don't sell anything, and never have in the 40 years that I've been involved in this field. We've never sold
products. So hence there is a fee, and that's a fee for your...
Correct.
Discernment, your research, and this.
Correct.
Yeah.
So you pay for my time in doing the reports, and then I do phone consultations for patients, but I'm not a medical doctor. I go out of my way to make it clear to people I'm not a medical doctor. I don't have the training background or licensure to play doctor. Mostly what I'm interested in is being able to suggest pathways for people that they could take so that they can get the best possible outcome from their cancer. This could include going to clinics in the United States or abroad. I have visited more than a dozen countries where there are innovative cancer treatments. In the last year, I've been to Germany, Holland, Austria, China, many places around the world, just to keep my knowledge current of what's going on. And I think there are some people who sell pamphlets and stuff about the German clinics that seem wildly exaggerated to me and really very promotional. But I've made 17 trips to Germany, to the clinics in Germany, and I was the first American to be chosen as an honorary member of the German Society of Oncology. So I think my knowledge of the German area clinics is probably as good as anything you're likely to find. And I'm not a blind enthusiast. I see their good points, the bad points. I discourage a lot of people from going because some people just aren't up to the trip, or they may have wrong expectations about it. But I really believe that the advantage of the German system, and it goes to Austria as well and some other countries, is the freedom that the doctors have to use the best treatments that they see fit in their own clinics without fear of persecution or fear of losing their licenses or worse, going to prison. That is very widespread. The German doctors...
Well, actually, in California, I think it's virtually against the law
right.
to offer alternative cancer treatments. I mean,
correct.
It's unusual that California is such a progressive state. You
right.
know, you can do virtually anything there, but you can't treat cancer alternatively.
Right.
How bizarre is that?
Right. And different states have, you know, there's different degrees of freedom or lack of freedom. But we have overarching that is the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, which all too often acts like it's a branch of big pharma, of the pharmaceutical industry. I think that the FDA is a victim of what's called agency capture. I think that the FDA has allowed itself to become the booster and promoter of big pharma to the detriment of individual doctors who want to treat with not purely pharmacological methods in their offices, and to the detriment of entrepreneurs and other developers of products that could be competitive with the big pharma products. And big pharma is out of hand in this, and FDA has gone along with it. The pricing of new cancer drugs, as we mentioned earlier, is gone through the roof. It's unbelievable. And a pharmaceutical company now expects to make $1 billion a year off of their new cancer drugs. And the only way they can do that is by soaking the cancer patient and the insurance and the government and the insurance companies and the hospitals, charging upwards of $100,000, $125,000, even $150,000 per patient, charging $30,000 for single injections of drugs, and it doesn't cost them even a tiny fraction of that. So maybe 6% of that is actually what their cost is. 94% is profit. So there's something terribly wrong with what's happened in the cancer field vis-a-vis big pharma. In Germany, many doctors, to my knowledge, are using very simple, less expensive, certainly less toxic treatments, or using chemotherapy but at lower doses than American doctors are prescribing, getting good results, trying to publish when they can, and sometimes publishing at ASCO, the oncology meeting, sometimes publishing in good journals, which is becoming somewhat less difficult for complementary doctors, but they're getting good results, and the patients are much happier, and the cost is much less. But here in this country, FDA does everything it can to stand in the way of that. Hypothermia, or heat therapy, is like the ideal adjunctive treatment. It doesn't work by itself, but it makes other treatments more effective. And it should be allowed across the board, just like Band-Aid is approved, regardless of where you have your sore or your cut. Hypothermia or heat therapy should be approved across the board for cancer. Instead, the FDA demands that you have a new clinical trial for every indication,
every individual type of cancer.
And
right.
stage
right.
of cancer.
Wow.
150 kinds of cancer, four stages.
And what does that cost? What does each
$2.4 million.
Right. So this is a huge bar to the adoption of this type
right.
of therapy.
And it'll be 2,000 years before they have finally
right.
approved
right.
all the kinds of cancer and take minimally profitable companies
right.
and expect them to pay out $100 million.
It's
absurd.
So clearly, the way it's set up economically and from a regulatory standpoint militates towards expensive magic bullet therapies
yeah.
that are not naturally based. Many of our cancer therapies now are based on natural agents,
yeah.
Taxol
right.
and the vinca alkaloids,
right.
vincristine. These are actually based on plants,
right?
But yet they're purified, tested, and patented. You know,
right.
and they're not. By the time they're done with them, they're not natural. Let's focus in on some of the individual types of cancer therapy that some of our listeners might be interested
sure.
in. Intravenous vitamin C.
Yeah.
We've interviewed Jeannie Drisco, who's
mm-hmm.
at Kansas University Medical School, doing
right.
Pretty rigorous research now looking at intravenous vitamin C.
Yeah.
Your take on that is adjunctive, obviously, not
yeah.
curative for cancer.
Well, I would like to see more publish. I have with me the latest issue of Integrative Cancer Therapy Journal. So I think there's an article in there on vitamin C, intravenous vitamin C. My instinct is that it is a beneficial treatment that certainly seems to improve the health and well-being and functioning.
Quality of life
of the patients. And I say this based on many anecdotes that I've heard from patients. But I share many people's frustration that after so many years, we haven't had more rigorous studies completed. I think maybe Jeannie could produce those in the years to come, but I'm sort of awaiting that.
Right. What about, speaking of therapies that have been tested in the arena of research, we've recently talked to Dr. Nick Gonzalez,
yeah.
Who has himself written a sad chronicle of his encounter with the cancer establishment in an effort to demonstrate that his therapies, which are unique and complicated, involving diet regimens and lots of digestive enzymes and tons of supplements, yeah. were helpful for patients. And yet he felt stymied when he tried to go the conventional research route.
Right.
What's your take on that?
Well, I've read his book, and it sounds like there were some things wrong with the way that Columbia conducted the study. And he's really written the definitive, history of what happened there. I'm not fully a subscriber to the trophoblastic theory.
The digest proteolytic enzymes and so on.
I can't fully buy onto that because I know through talking to people who run good laboratories that there are many cancers that don't exhibit human chorionic gonadotropin hormone, which would be the prerequisite for declaring a cancer to be sort of trophoblastic in nature. So I have many questions still
right.
about that.
And another vogue now in cancer mm-hmm. therapy
I know
is kind of going back to the, the Krebs theory about, the causation of cancer.
Yeah.
The ketogenic diet, merely starve the cancer
right.
of sugar
yes.
and it will regress. What's your take on that?
I'm very excited about this. I visited Tom Seyfried, who wrote the book Cancer is a Metabolic Disease.
Mm-hmm.
I visited him about a year and a half ago up in Boston College, and he's a very wonderful researcher with a large laboratory, about 20 people in his lab. And they are initially testing this very low-carb diet in brain cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So there are clinical trials now at University of Pittsburgh, in the University of Eastern Michigan, and I also believe in Florida, in Central Florida. And the preliminary results that came out this summer look very encouraging. It's not just the ketogenic diet, it's a calorie-restricted
And it has, that's the other point, is you can't eat, like Bob Atkins'
right.
Diet, where you're having bacon cheeseburgers and
right.
throw away the bun.
Right.
It has to be somewhat restricted. Also, he sometimes combines it with hyperbaric oxygen.
Yes, he has a colleague in Florida who is enthusiastic about hyperbaric oxygen, which by itself has not produced much in the cancer field. But I'm encouraged by it, and I'm optimistic about it. I think there's a lot of medical benefit to ketogenic diet, which is the very, very, Atkins type of diet, because the initial reason for investigating this was that the Johns Hopkins protocol for treating brain seizures
in children
with epilepsy.
Yep.
It's phenomenally effective. And in fact, I spoke at Johns Hopkins University last May, the May before this May, and it was on this topic. Pete Peterson is a professor of biological chemistry there, invited me to speak. And we had about 100 people at Hopkins, including people who still, they've been using that diet for treating epilepsy for maybe 60, 70 years. So it's quite established at the number one research medical school in the country. We originally developed at Mayo Clinic. So I'm enthusiastic about it. I'm encouraged, but I don't mistake my enthusiasm for proof. We still have a long way to go before these trials are completed, and if we could show real substantial benefit in brain cancers, in glioblastomas, I would say we're we're sort of halfway there to then being able to say, you know, if this works in brain cancer, let's try this in pancreas and some of the other cancers. And it could be an important breakthrough, but we've still got a ways to go with this.
Ralph, more and more we're seeing the adoption of complementary medical techniques at various hospitals.
Yes.
Even the self-same Memorial Sloan Kettering has an integrative medicine department, integrative cancer therapy department. They publish a directory of therapies. They rate the safety and efficacy of different therapies.
Yeah.
Are you pleased or dismayed at that trend? I mean, they will tell you if you have cancer, you can have yoga, you can have acupuncture, you can do mind-body therapies.
Right.
Is this sort of... integrative medicine light?
Yeah, it is. But it's better than nothing. And I would say what really thrilled me was earlier this year, I saw a survey from the Mayo Clinic, not a center famous for friendliness towards complementary medicine, quite the opposite. And something like 64% of the doctors at Mayo said that they were favorable or very favorable towards complementary medicine. Now, that's, for those of us like you and I have been in this field a long time, I mean, those are almost unbelievable. You have to pinch yourself to believe that two-thirds of the docs at a conservative place like Mayo Clinic consider themselves friends of complementary medicine. Without the formation of the Office of Alternative Medicine 20 years ago, that none of that would have taken place. So there's a big plus and a big minus to the what happened at the federal level, which, as you know, I was very much involved in. I think the pluses outweigh the minuses. It's great that these centers exist. They give validation. They've more or less silenced the quackbusters who are professional skeptics and critics of all alternative medicine. And
they haven't met an alternative therapy that they like.
Exactly. So I think it's mainly positive, even with Memorial Sloan Kettering. All right, it's better that people get the acupuncture and the meditation. They're slow to adopt other treatments.
Well, what you're worried about is biomedical treatments.
I am. That's
that
always
are
been
more hard-hitting,
right,
and not merely, you know, just sort of like feel-good therapies.
But don't you think that the whole history would have been different had the leaders of Sloan Kettering stood firm on their initial belief in Dr. Segura's work with Laetrile? If they had gone to the wall, as my boss's boss, Lewis Thomas, said, I'm not going to die on the barricades for Laetrile. It's only a palliative drug. If he had said the opposite, that it's a matter of principle, that we uphold the truth about Laetrile regardless of what it does to us personally in our careers or what it does to our institution, if he had taken that stand, then we might see a more vigorous departments of complementary medicine today, because the leading light of alternative medicine was ignominiously defeated in the 1970s and early 1980s by misstatements and outright lies about its effectiveness and its supposed toxicity. So you have to reverse the verdict on this in order to make the breakthrough into restoring the prestige and the, if you will, the honor of complementary treatment. If we reopen the case with Laetrile, we re-examine this and we convince the American public that in fact Laetrile had some virtue to it, enough so that it deserves to be seriously researched the way the Germans and the Spaniards and the Chinese are now researching it, then I think we can make the next breakthrough. The next breakthrough has to be serious consideration of the controversial treatments in cancer. Brzezinski's treatment, certainly the Laetrile treatment, maybe the enzyme thing. Things that, you know, that bureaucrats tend to shy away from because they're afraid of controversy. But the public isn't afraid of controversy. The public wants to know whether these things have merit to them. If you could trust the decision-making process, then we could get answers, including marijuana, by the way, which is one of the most...
There's some very promising research on cannabidiol and THC.
And you don't have to look far to why that research has not gone anywhere.
Not just to make you feel better and increase your appetite, but actually to have an action on the cancer.
Right, so we need to know.
A lot of natural therapies that can be mainstreamed. That's a very eloquent way to sum things up. And so that's the theme of Second Opinion. It's going to be very worthwhile for you to take the time to either go to the premiere or download the film. You can go to secondopinionfilm.com. And our Intelligent Medicine call to action today, Eric, sum it up. What's the invitation for our New York listeners? It's Cinema Village, right?
Cinema Village, 22 West 12th Street. If you come out tonight at the 7 p.m. show, we will all be there to do a Q&A. And we'll try to do some over the weekend as well. But if you check the website, we'll be updated. But definitely 7 p.m. show, we'll all be there. We're expecting a lot of people to show up. So you can order your tickets online now if you wish.
And the website is secondopinionfilm.com.
And that'll be through Tuesday, the 3rd?
Actually, through Thursday.
Through Thursday.
The 4th.
So the 4th of... Okay, I've got to get my dates straight. I'm a little disoriented. It's Labor Day weekend. All right. Thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Absolutely. And keep up the great work. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.